Welcome back to Money in America with Randall Turner. Dan Griswold is the director of the Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute in Washington, D.C., and he's the author of the new Cato book, Mad About Trade, Why Main Street America Should Embrace Globalization. Good morning, Dan.
Well, glad to be with you.
Well, there's lots to talk about. I guess the question has never been resolved in my own mind, so I guess that's why I thought it'd be fun to talk to you. Why do you think that globalization is such a wonderful thing for here, there, anywhere on Main Street in America?
Well, I think it gets back to competition. Is it better in your Main Street town? I grew up in a small town in central Minnesota. Is it better to have four gas stations or one? Is it better to have six or seven restaurants in town or two? We benefit from competition through lower prices, more choice. The producers have to work harder for our money, and trade does the same thing. Trade brings more competition to our domestic market. It means lower prices for consumers, which lower prices means higher real wages. It doesn't affect that many Americans in terms of jobs. Most Americans don't compete directly against imports. We all benefit as consumers. Pretty small minority compete directly as workers. And then, of course, there's tremendous opportunities in terms of exports, in terms of foreign investment. And above all that, it's creating, I think, as just a humanitarian feeling, it's reducing poverty in the world and creating a more peaceful, democratic world. And that those are all good things.
Well, I guess the question that gets stuck in my brain is, since I grew up in a manufacturing area that now is very little manufacturing in comparison, yeah, I get concerned. Those jobs are obviously going overseas or Mexico or whatever. Yeah, how does that play into the big picture?
Well, manufacturing is an important part of the U.S. economy, but the truth about U.S. manufacturing isn't that it's shrinking or going away. It's that it's changing. We're actually producing more stuff in terms of its value today than we were 20 or 30 years ago. It's just different stuff, more higher-end products, pharmaceuticals, chemicals, semiconductors, sophisticated medical equipment, civilian airliners, fewer shoes and shirts and plastic toys. Those have been going overseas for years before anybody was talking about China. So we're producing more stuff with about 5 million fewer workers than 10 years ago, because they're so much more productive, because of machinery, because of being better educated, because of working in more capital-intensive manufacturing industries. We can produce more stuff with fewer workers. We remain the world's number one manufacturing nation. We're a manufacturing powerhouse. We're just producing different stuff, and we're producing it more efficiently, and that's basically a good story.
Well, I remember all through the 80s and 90s, we were told so often, you know, you watch the nightly news, and we're always told so often that we're just shipping our low-pay, low-skilled jobs overseas, and that we're going to retain the high-pay, high-skilled, high-education kind of jobs here. But of late, that seems to be changing now that, you know, when I had my MRI done a couple years ago, the MRI was read in our local hospital by a doctor in India.
Yeah. Well, of course, I'd say maybe that's one way of holding medical costs down. But, you know, keep in mind we're coming out of a steep recession. Still have a high unemployment rate. Of course, that wasn't caused by trade. This was a made-in-the-USA recession with the housing bubble and all the policy mistakes that went into that. So it's a little misleading right now. But if you step back the way I do in the book and look at trends over the last 20, 30, 40 years, some things really jump out at you. And one, we are better off than we were 20 years ago in terms of real median household income, in terms of real compensation per hour, wages and benefits. The other thing that jumps out is you look at the jobs, say over the last 20 years, the jobs that have been added in our economy, two-thirds of the net new jobs in the last 20 years are in sectors of the economy that are primarily service sectors where the wages are actually higher than in manufacturing. So we are moving up. We're coming out of a recession that gave us a big hit, but the long-term trend is still up, and trade and globalization have something to do with that.
Okay. I understand your theory. I understand the competition is good for us. I have no complaint there. I'm about as pro-capitalist as you can get. But I get concerned when I look at other things. I look at the manufacturing, the okay, so you're right, it's changing and it's moving to other parts of this country. But I also look at our trade imbalance, and frankly, that scares
me.
And how do we get a handle on that, I guess?
Yeah, I spend a whole chapter in the book examining the U.S. trade deficit, the trade balance. And it means less than we think. It is not a scorecard of who's winning in the global economy. You got to remember that in the global economy, we're not just trading goods and services with other people. We're trading assets. U.S. companies investing abroad, foreign companies investing in the United States, central governments buying treasury bonds and that sort of thing. And the flip side of that trade deficit is a capital surplus. Year after year, the world's sending $400-500 billion more in investment capital here to the United States than we're sending abroad. That means lower interest rates for homeowners. It's keeping more people in their homes. It means investment in factories. You talked about manufacturing. The story in the automotive industry is the way it's not so much gone overseas, but migrated from the upper Midwest, Michigan, Detroit, to southern right-to-work states. And these foreign-owned, non-union facilities owned by Honda and Toyota and Nissan pay very good wages. They're just not unionized. That's foreign investment. That's what foreigners do with those dollars. If they're not buying our soybeans or our semiconductors, they're investing here in the United States in creating good-paying jobs.
Okay, let's put it on the small businessman's scale. How can he take advantage of this globalization?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's the question. If I'm going to have to play in a globalized world, how do I actually become competitive to do that? And
yes.
Does that make sense?
I mean, it does. And one truth that I have to put on the table is that, you know, in some ways, globalization, there's less there than meets the eye. You know, we're a $14 trillion economy. Most of the business that U.S. Americans do is with other Americans. And most small businesses don't have direct interaction with the global economy, although if you're a retailer or something, you're selling goods made abroad. But here's an interesting figure. If you look at U.S. companies that export, there are now about 250,000 U.S. companies that are exporting. The large majority of them are small and medium-sized enterprises, some of them just exporting to one market like Canada or Mexico. But the combination of the Internet and global shippers like FedEx or UPS has allowed U.S. small businesses to tap into global markets. This is a very exciting opportunity.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I remember Ross Perot's famous statement about the giant sucking sound, about NAFTA being approved. Can we debunk that now with all these kind of studies?
I'm still waiting for the giant sucking sound, and I don't think it's ever going to happen. You know, he said if we pass NAFTA, there's going to be a giant sucking sound of U.S. jobs and investment going to Mexico. Well, actually, you know, keep in mind, NAFTA went into effect in January of 1994. That was actually the beginning of one of the best economic stretches we've had in our lifetime. Through the rest of the 1990s, we actually added 700,000 manufacturing jobs. The unemployment rate dropped to below 4%. The economy was going well in the NAFTA era, and about that time we passed the Uruguay Round Agreements Act, which created the WTO and further lowered tariff barriers, and trade volumes went up. So obviously we can have robust, expanding trade and a prospering economy, which is what we had. Of course, the high-tech bubble burst in 2000, but that didn't have anything to do with NAFTA. So our investment in NAFTA remains a pretty modest. Our investment in Mexico is a pretty modest $2 billion a year compared to $150 billion or $200 billion we invest every year in manufacturing in our domestic economy. So Ross Perot was just wrong about that, and the people saying the same thing about China today I think are just as wrong. By the way, before that they were saying it about Japan, weren't they? Japan was going to come and take all their jobs. We're always looking for some foreign bogeyman without looking at our own policies and what we need to change here in the United States.
Well, okay. I find all this fascinating. If people want to find your book, how do they find your book?
They can go to Amazon.com, and it's available there. It's in fine bookstores all over the country. I see copies in Barnes & Noble and Borders. It's available in Kindle format.
Oh, cool.
And so it's called Mad About Trade, Why Main Street America Should Embrace Globalization. They can also visit our Cato website, cato.org, and they can find all our research on trade, immigration issues, and really every other issue under the sun.
Well, great. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Dan Griswold. He's the director of the Center for Trade Policy Studies at Cato Institute. And as you just heard, he has a book called Mad About Trade, Why Main Street America Should Embrace Globalization. I'd heartily recommend it. And this is Money in America with Randall Turner.